greatest one-hit wonder of all time. Because Dexy's Midnight Runners never had anything close to another hit. Not even close.
Great tune. Yeah, pretty much.
I love this record. Love.
It's a great record. It's better than their third record.
Which, there was a second?
No, this was off of their second album.
Okay.
On their third album, the
after they tasted a little success.
After they tasted a little success, the lead of the band who I completely...
Kevin Rollins.
What's that?
Kevin Rollins?
Yeah, Kevin Rollins.
Yeah, thank
you. He decided to just like completely go prog rock.
He indulged in his yeah. Absolutely.
And so one of my favorite cuts off of the third album, there's like this 10-minute song, which is just him and I think the drummer of the band just like bantering for a good 10 minutes, set to the tune of Werewolves of London.
Cool.
It's beautiful.
That sounds like something I might enjoy. Anyway, welcome back to Cairo Nights. I'm Spike O'Neill. Tony's running the board. Matt's in there just laughing his head off. Oh, a texter pointed out that I spent that last break not responding to the text or giving back the pulse of the folks who had texted in the show, and that the texter didn't have a chance to listen for very long tonight. And I apologize that last break of the hour, is by far our shortest break of the night. And we really don't have time to get into every single text. There have been literally, I'm going to probably guess around 200 texts since we asked the question, who do you like in the next election? Is Donald Trump the next best thing for the Republican Party moving forward? And I will try to address some of those texts now. Texters say, no one I know is voting for Trump. We voted for Trump in 2016. We've all moved on to DeSantis. Guy says, I know a lot of people. So, I don't know. I don't know. I can try to give you as much as I know. Texter asked, did you listen to Trump's speech last night, his announcement? We played about 25 minutes of it live here at Cairo, and then we had to move on. We waited for ex-president, former President Trump to say officially that I declare that I'm running, seeking the presidency in 2024. It took about 20 minutes to get there as he, addressed what he sees as the state of the nation. Texter says, I watched the whole thing on Fox News. Well, I don't know how you did because they bailed at 25 minutes too. So anyway, and I'm not, like I said, we've all got different points of view. A texter pointed out the only person I listen to on Fox News is Tucker Carlson. And I had to ask the same Tucker Carlson whose attorneys in court defended his positions by saying he's an opinion show and serious people don't take what he says seriously. That's what he said in court, and the listener responded. And I appreciate all you guys. I really do. I'm just saying that he has his finger on the pulse of the people. Well, if he is spreading misinformation and in court he defends it by saying, people know that I'm just giving my opinions and no one takes what I says seriously, I don't think he doesn't have his finger on the pulse of the people. He's driving the people's pulse.
What he has his finger on is the paranoia of some people.
Well, Matt, we're not going to, he is leading the, he's not responding to what he hears. He's telling a lot of people, I'm not talking about this particular texter.
To be clear, I'm talking about Tucker.
Oh, me too. What I'm saying is he is driving the conversation. He is telling, and not you, texter, I'm not talking about you in the 253. He's telling a lot of people what to think. And when he's called out on it, like for example, for the voting machine, and what I'm speaking of is the voting machines that people on Fox News and other conservative media outlets, gave damning commentary about about how they were being used and manipulated to flip the election and steal an election. And when you get you can make claims like that in the media, that's like I said, these are opinion shows. You can make claims like that. But when you have to go into court, when you are damaging a business, their credibility, their reputation, their livelihood, the people who work there's livelihood, the stockholders who own part of that company, when you're affecting their livelihood by disparaging their credibility and their ability to do their jobs, when you say that, you got to go to court. Okay? And if you can't defend it in court, that's where facts matter. That's where lies are held to account. Someone says, then why is he number one? Well, just because you're number one doesn't mean that everything you say is true.
And my counter to that is Nickelback sold a heck of a lot of albums.
And I'm not equating anybody to Hitler, but Hitler was number one too, okay? You know, I'm not equating anybody to Nazism. I'm not equating anybody to the genocidal maniac that was Adolf Hitler. I'm not saying that in any way, shape, or form. You know, having a million people follow you off a cliff doesn't make it the right thing to do. You know, I've often said, I think my dad told me this. If you put a candle in a room, every moth is going to go to it. It doesn't make it the sun. Okay, it just makes what everybody's flocking toward. Anyway, and this is how I don't get to your texts. I start talking, and it's okay. I'm happy to have these conversations with people. I really am. A lot of people said, someone said that Trey Gowdy would get their support for the Republican nomination. That was what we were trying to find out. You know, I am a liberal. You know, I don't think that Donald Trump's policies were the best for America. I don't think that isolationism is the best policy. I don't think tariffs are the way to go. Donald Trump last night, and I did watch his speech in its entirety after our broadcast last night. He said that, you know, he was talking about how China paid all this money to America's farmers through tariffs. That's not how tariffs work. Anybody that knows anything about the economy will tell you that tariffs are a fee that's put onto an imported good, and that's paid by the purchaser of the good. That's paid by the people who bring Chinese goods into America. That's not paid by the Chinese government. And the money that the farmers got from the Trump administration was federal tax dollars sent to help the farmers during the pandemic. That wasn't Chinese tariff money. Okay, that was American taxpayer money, much like the money that went to make PPP loans, which were forgiven, much like the money proposed to go to student loan relief, which will be forgiven. That's your tax dollars being spent in ways that the government hasn't spent them before. Tariffs aren't money the Japanese or the Chinese or the Germans or whatever countries importing to America that we're putting tariffs on. That's not where the money comes. It doesn't come from China. I just, you know, let's deal in reality. Let's deal in facts.
I'm still waiting for Mexico to pay for that wall.
Again, Matt, we're not looking backwards. We're looking forward, okay? I'm with you, buddy. I know.
I just said I'm still waiting.
I'm still, okay, fair enough.
I'm hopeful.
Fair enough.
It's infrastructure week any day now.
Fair enough. You know, it's a long road, and we aren't trying to run the U.S. off a cliff. And you say we. I text her. That's great. And I was using an analogy of lemmings. You know, following lemmings off a cliff doesn't make it the right thing. I'm not saying the Republican Party or Donald Trump is trying to take America off a cliff. It's funny, though, because that's exactly the argument being made by former President Trump and by a lot of Republicans running for public office, that people who disagree with them are evil and hate America. I don't think people are evil and hate America. I think I disagree with their priorities and their programs and their policies and their vision for what's going to work. That's all. The fact that we can't disagree without making somebody else the enemy that we disagree with, I think, is half the problem. Trump and DeSantis will work together. I hope that could be the case if that is indeed comes to play. I will make a bet with whoever this texter from the 360 that says Trump and DeSantis will work together. Do you think Trump is capable of working with Ron DeSantis if the American people pick Ron DeSantis over Donald Trump and Trump's ego has to take that? Do you think that Donald Trump will be willing to work with Ron DeSantis? As Ron DeSantis won his state's reelection bid for governor of Florida, Donald Trump went on the attack of Ron DeSantis. Started saying, and this is Donald Trump words, not mine, DeSantis would be nothing without me. He said, I sent the FBI down there and the federal investigators down there to make sure he won the election. Donald
Spoiler
Trump said
alert,
that.
That didn't happen.
Right. But that's what Trump went on the offensive to start slamming DeSantis.
He
you think he
started
can work together?
Saying he knew more about him than anybody except maybe his wife, implying that there was some sort of dirt there. One thing that's objective, whether you like Donald Trump or not, you have to admit that once someone has been in his circle and he has no use for them or they say something against him, he discards them very quickly. So any loyalty or affinity he once had for DeSantis means nothing to Trump now because Trump likes to punish people who step out of line in his circle.
And that's not the conversation. You're right. It's not the conversation we're having, but that's not just Matt's opinion. That is easy to verify through numerous examples, too many examples to bring up here tonight. And they're easy to find. Someone texted in, there's a difference between Republicans and Trump Republicans. I agree. I agree wholeheartedly. I have beliefs and priorities that conform to conservative views. I really do. And I said this last week, I'll say it 1,000 times again. Many platforms of the Democratic policy and their movement drive me nuts. Drive me nuts. I think they're just ridiculous.
Name one.
The fact that you are teaching children first aid for active shooters. That story came up this week. There's a place in Camden, Ohio, where a local minister has started a program to teach school children how to address gun wounds, given the fact we have such a proliferation of school shootings in this country. And he started teaching the children as young as 3 years old. I think that's insane. I don't think it's a bad idea that kids know how to do first aid. I don't think that's a bad idea at all.
Wait, but that's not a Democratic policy.
Okay, fair enough.
That's something that people are doing because of the tragedy of school shootings.
I agree.
That has nothing to do with a party platform.
That's fair. I think cancel culture is something very Democratic, and that's not a Democratic policy. I guess I'm saying left-leaning things. You know, some of the stuff that comes out of the MAGA Republicans, if I dare, you know, drives me nuts. But I don't think that's Republican politics. I don't think that's conservative priorities. I really don't. This texter points out there's a vast difference between Republicans and Trump Republicans or MAGA. Is that what you meant by Trump Republicans? You know, that is kind of what President Biden said when he said America is, at risk. Democracy is at risk. That extremist, MAGA extremists. That there are many Republicans don't share those views. Isn't that the same thing Trump or Biden was saying?
But I'm going to hold you to this. Name one policy that is part of the Democratic Party platform. I seriously want to know the answer to this question.
Give me a minute or two. Okay, I will. I will give you that. I'm trying to do three things at once here, Matt. I don't know that when I try to engage with the texters. And give you your point. Someone says, I voted for Trump twice, definitely will not a third time. That's what we're asking is, what do you think about Trump? We've given you plenty of what we think about Trump, what I think about Trump. And I will gladly give you, more stuff. DeSantis, Scott, Tim Scott. Dulcie Gabbard, I'm not sure about that one. And again, I'm just asking your opinion. You don't need mine. Tulsi Gabbard, right? It's Tulsi Gabbard. Not Dulcie, I apologize. Dulcie Gabbard seems, I don't know how to frame that one. Here's a person who has gone on television to literally echo Russian talking points about Ukraine. And I don't know how that serves America. You know, we could talk about Ukraine if we want to. It says, before you make your conclusion, Spike, remove your bias. I've admitted many, many times to my biases. And my prejudices. We all carry biases and prejudice with us. It's impossible not to. We are a product of how we were raised, where we grew up. We've all got those. Someone texted in, next year is going to be tough for Joe Biden and Hunter Biden. Well, okay. I guarantee you, you're right. With control of the House going to the Republicans, and it's official today, I think they confirmed the 218th, 219th seat that will go Republican in the House of Representatives. So you'll have a divided government, which is not bad. Not a bad thing to have, is a divided government. I don't know Hunter Biden's relevance. If you're making the leap then that Hunter Biden committed crimes and his father covered them up, if that is what comes out of an honest investigation, then that's what should be dealt with and people should be held accountable. Absolutely. Wouldn't begin to say anything otherwise. I think the source of Hunter Biden's criminal activity being a laptop computer that the FBI said was likely subjected to Russian disinformation, a computer that had been out of the chain of custody. If you guys know how chain of custody works with regard to evidence, it's like saying the gun used in a crime, if you don't know where it was, and people's fingerprints are all over it, it's not admissible in court. It can't be a trusted source of evidence. I think the same can be said, and that's what was said by the FBI about Hunter Biden's laptop. So you folks that are all hopped up about Hunter Biden's laptop, and now next year is going to be a parade of investigations into Hunter Biden. I don't know that it's going to get you the results you think it's going to get you. Because obviously what you think is that Hunter Biden committed crimes and Joe Biden covered it up. And if you've got any evidence to prove that, if any evidence is put forth to prove that, then by all means, take the sumbitch down. Absolutely. But just making the accusation is baseless, is hollow. You know, all of the crooked crime, the Biden crime family, I find that hilarious. Hilarious. Given the track record of the Trump family. And I hate whataboutism. But when you guys are talking about the Biden crime family as a pushback on Donald Trump, criticism of Donald Trump and his children who have lost the ability to have a charitable organization in New York, who have lost the ability to potentially even own a business in New York because of their criminal activity, the charges against them, the evidence against them by a grand jury, the charges that have been brought. I love that we live in these times. I love that we have these debates, these discussions. I thank you very much. Texter 253 says, keep it fun. This is too political. We try to get what do you think about. I can't do it, Matt. I can't give what you think about Trump without giving you what I think about Trump. So we are going to move on. That's fair. Texter, thank you. 253. Thank you. A lot of people in this text line are still supporters of the former president. And that's what we wanted to find out. A lot of people in this text line are Republicans who think it's time to move on. And that's what we wanted to find out. That was the goal of this. Not for me to give you my political opinions. I've done that a lot. I didn't intend to do that tonight. If Biden's Republicans, your hair would be on fire. No, not at all. My hair's not on fire about the Trump family. And those charges have been supported by grand jury investigations. If the Bidens are guilty of crimes, they should be strung up. I'll give it to you. I've never said anything otherwise. But let's talk about evidence. Let's talk about not talk about accusations. Is Hunter Biden a former recovering crackhead? Yes. Is Hunter Biden a guy who got a job because of his last name and wasn't qualified for the position? Yes. Let's not look at Eric Trump while we're talking about a kid who was underqualified for a gig he got. I mean, come on, folks. Coming up next, anything but politics. There's a big story out of Congress about marriage and love and equality. And we can talk about that, but we may want to find something really, really meaningless to talk about in the interim just to cleanse our palate. So we'll be right back after these. It's Cairo Nights. I'm Spike O'Neill with Matt Butler, and Tony's on the board. See you shortly. Welcome back to Cairo Nights. Woo! The texts are still coming in like a tidal wave. Yeah. I do want to talk about the story that Lisa brought up again. The SDOT removing a community-painted crosswalk. And this is in the Greenwood neighborhood. Greenwood Avenue North and 83rd, North 83rd Street. Crews from the Seattle Department of Transportation removed a crosswalk that's been painted by community on Monday, angering residents who felt the removal was unnecessary. In September 21, residents painted a crosswalk on Greenwood and 83rd, North 83rd, saying they're tired of waiting for the city to install a crosswalk. According to the Seattle Times, the crosswalk was supposed to be built in 2021, but the pandemic and supply chain caused delay, and with labor being diverted to the West Seattle Bridge, the crosswalk was never built. That's frustrating, Seattle Councilmember Andrew Lewis said at the time. We have the time and money, apparently, to expediently remove a crosswalk, but it takes years to get around to actually painting one. No wonder neighbors took it upon themselves to act. A second crosswalk at East Olive Way and Harvard Avenue East was painted earlier this week, and crews with SDOT were out removing it on Wednesday morning. And I got to ask, what is the sense? Where's the common sense? especially if a crosswalk was approved by the city, as is the case at Greenwood and North 83rd. The crosswalk was approved. The city doesn't have the manpower or the resources or time to get around to doing it. So the neighbors did it themselves. If there was tree branches needed to be removed to keep power lines from being brought down in a windstorm, or if tree branches were grown out to blocking a stop sign and that caused a public safety issue, and the neighbors, the city didn't have the time or the manpower to come out and remove the tree branches from around the power lines or the stop sign, and the neighbors took it upon themselves to take those branches out, would the city come out and glue the branches back on the tree because it wasn't their job, it wasn't their crew that did the work? You've approved a crosswalk. You didn't get it done. The neighbors did it themselves. And you've got the time and energy to come out and power wash it off. Probably took as much effort, if not more, than it takes to put one down. I've seen crews do crosswalks in a day. Why would the city not say, look, okay, the crosswalk is there. It's already been approved. Let's just make it official. Send somebody out to cut a ribbon, make it an official crosswalk, hang some balloons, call the news department, whatever. Why is the city taking time and resources to take away something they approved that they know needs, that should be there? It puts neighbors at risk. It puts kids at risk. Why? I just don't see the sense in vigilante crosswalking or crosswalk painting. What's? I don't see the downside. I do see the downside in us all going out there and making our own street signs, putting our own crosswalks in. I'll give you that one. I understand that. If it's a crosswalk that wasn't sanctioned by the city, approved by the city, I'm sure all crosswalks that go up in Seattle or any municipality, there's a process of whether or not it's necessary. It causes any kind of undue delays in traffic flow or whatever the considerations when you put a crosswalk in. I'm sure there is debate and consideration and probably enough public hearings to, you know, graduate from a small university, public comment, all those things have to be brought in place. It's funny. There's when you want the public to have a say, part of our society, part of our system, it's a government of the people, for the people. That sounds very grandiose when you say it like that. A government of the people, by the people, for the people. But that even comes down to crosswalks. You know, if they're going to put a crosswalk in your neighborhood, you should have some input if there should be one. You know, is there enough traffic there that you got to warrant having someone stop every time a kid wants to cross the street or an adult or a senior wants to cross the street? We should all have input. That's what our system's for. That's how it was designed. It's how it works. It's the only way it works. So I get that I can't go out and just put a stop sign up where I think there should be one. I can't go put a speed bump on my street. If people have been ripping up and down your street, you know, and it's too fast, you can't go out and add your own traffic circle. You can't add your own speed bump. I know people who have tried. City didn't like that crap. They come out and they'll take off a crosswalk that you painted out. You put a friend of ours, my cousin's house, up in the Linwood area, their street became just a raceway, it seemed. And they had a bunch of kids playing there. So neighbors got together and put their own speed bump in. And the city came up and shoveled it away. You can't just make your own traffic, you know, addendums. You can't make your own traffic flow situations. I get that. But if the city has approved a crosswalk and just can't get around to getting it done, if they've approved it, obviously safety dictates it should be there. So if the neighbors take it upon themselves, did they use the wrong kind of paint? They didn't make it, you know, God forbid, a rainbow crosswalk like up on Capitol Hill during Pride Month. It was just a white crosswalk. And the city came out with power sprayers. And a crew of, looks, one, two, three, four, five people. I'm not going to make the joke of four people watching. Those are managers and the one person working. That's the city crew. I'm not going to make that joke, although you've all heard it. You know it's based in truth a lot of times. They come out and power wash away the crosswalk. Why would you? Okay. Because now you got to make you still have to send a crew out to paint it. If there's somebody from the Washington State Department of Transportation, or excuse me, the SDOT, not WDOT, SDOT. If there's somebody listening at SDOT who can explain to me why that was the common sense thing to do, was it just bureaucracy? Was it that the city's homemade crosswalk didn't meet the standards of SDOT crosswalks? Is there a special kind of paint you use that's more resilient to car traffic? Maybe that's it. Maybe there's a valid reason why you come out and you take away the city's crosswalk. By all accounts, and by all accounts of the story, the crosswalk the neighborhood put in place on their own was met all specifications of a crosswalk. It's frustrating. It is absolutely frustrating. And I'm not the only one to think so. This is a story from Cairo 7. I give them full credit, Cairo 7 News. That's where we got this story. Sometimes it's local news that delivers. A texter was getting into it with me. We're having a conversation, a discussion about national news versus local news and how our opinions are far too often shaped by a national narrative when local does such a better job. I was extolling the virtues of the Cairo newsroom earlier. I'd say the same thing about our local television newsrooms. And those are becoming fewer and further between. You know, I was bemoaning the fact that news isn't news anymore because it's a profit-driven propaganda machine for a lot of examples on both sides of the aisle. News is about sensationalism and getting people to tune in, and that's why fear sells. It's, you know, and that's not new. If it bleeds, it leads. It's always been the case. We were talking last night, Matt, you and I, about how dangerous it is that someone like Rupert Murdoch gets to be a kingmaker. Right, how Rupert Murdoch can decide whether or not to back Donald Trump in the 2024 election, and he'll decide who he wants his network of television and print to back. How unjust it seems that someone of that, a media mogul, gets to pick who the kingmaker, he gets to be a kingmaker. That's nothing new. William Randolph Hearst, used to be kingmaker. The people who owned the first newspapers, those guys, they decided who was in charge. And they told the public how to think. They informed the public as to who was the right candidate and the wrong candidate. They wrote editorials. The old adage is never get in a fight with somebody who buys ink by the barrel. Because you can never win. You can never get a big enough soapbox and even playing field to get your point across to theirs. So it's not anything new that information is controlled by major outlets. I'm with you. You people are saying we can't trust the media. I think there's truth in that. But I think there is media that you can trust. I wish I could give you an example, because what you think is trustworthy media, what I think is trustworthy media, might differ.
People so obsessed with being told what to think, and that's what they fear. How about we encourage more people to learn to actually think?
I'm with you. I'm with you. Boy, you've drilled down and got it right there. You know, it's funny. I was talking to somebody the other day about my kids' education, where my kids went to school. And I gave my younger daughter a private school education, and it benefited her. And I said this to you before, Matt, I think. It taught her how to think. It didn't just give her numbers and history lessons and mathematical equations and theorems and whatnot. It taught her how to be a critical thinker. They actually give courses now in college on how to disseminate information, how to be a critical thinker, how to spot fake news. That's become a college course. I think it should be a damn high school course. I think it should be mandatory these days that all of us get taught how to multiply source our information. What is a trustworthy news source and what is not a trustworthy news source? It's a sad statement that there aren't very many trustworthy news sources out there anymore. One place you can go for news, the Cairo Newsroom. I'll say it again. I'll say it 1,000 times. Cairo News Radio. It's Cairo Nights with Spike O'Neill, Matt Butler. Tony's on the board. We're glad you're here, Tony.
Little, glad to be here.
Another one-hit wonder. Is it one-hit wonder Wednesday here? Is that what it is?
I guess.
See, it's kind of cool.
The thing is, a-ha is only technically a one-hit wonder in the U.S. In their
I'm huge in Europe, Tony.
Yeah, in their native country, they actually had a second hit, Sun Always Shines on TV.
We're huge in Europe. It's a great band name. Was there a band name called We're Huge in Europe?
If there isn't, there should be.
It should be. I like free beer, right? Okay. It's Cairo Nights. We'll be right back. Flock of Seagulls. Come on, guys. Come on. Give me something hard. Hardly a one-hit wonder, though, Tony. I thought we were a one-hit wonder Wednesday.
Right?
I saw these guys live once.
Oh, no kidding.
At a little bar in Baltimore. I swear to God, Max's on Broadway, then in Fells Point in Baltimore. probably, well, it would have to be mid-80s because I was here by the late 80s. And they had already had this all their hits, and they were playing this little club, and they were fantastic. I mean, just fantastic. And you can still see bands of this era and this this genre touring. They touring packs now for Survival, I believe, right? they get together with a bunch of other bands of modest success of their era, and they go touring together. And they're fantastic shows. You see it all the time. Not just new wave stuff, but you know, they're big hair tours. There are disco band tours, there are soul band tours that kind of get together, much like we've talked about this before, Matt, about tours in the early 50s. That's how the young stars would gather together and tour in groups. Country does this still to this day all the time. Who's the show that's coming? George Strait? And who else is with this? I apologize, I don't know.
Little Big Town, and I believe Chris Stapleton.
Chris Stapleton,
also on
that's
bill.
Couldn't think of. Yep, that's going to be a great show. You got to love like a mini festival kind of a show. That's a great tour. I saw the Elvis movie recently. The Baz Luhrmann Elvis movie. And the kid who did Elvis was phenomenal. I mean, phenomenal. I'm not crazy about the way Baz Luhrmann tells stories. You know, his style of movie making is very uniquely his own. And the Elvis movie, while very well done, was a little too Baz Luhrmann for me. I almost wish someone else had done the story, an Elvis movie, with that kid, and I can't remember his name. I should, if you guys could grab it for me, or if somebody out there in the text line knows it, I'd love to give him credit because he was brilliant as Elvis, just brilliant. And he's
Austin Butler.
Austin
no relation.
Butler. Thank you. No, that's why we hired you, so you could get him on our show eventually. No kidding. Hey, by the way, we have a chance at getting Kenny G on the show. Do you think we should do it?
Absolutely.
Right on. Both you guys. So look at the smiles. And yeah, I think so too. Yeah, Kenny G's got something he's promoting recently coming up. And we were asked if we'd like to get Kenny G on the show. And I'm thinking, absolutely. I told you about the time the last time I interviewed Kenny G and what I tried to do and they wouldn't let me do it. I wanted to put a camera up in the station elevator. I was at a different station in a big, tall building. And I wanted to put a GoPro up in the elevator, in the back of the elevator, and have Kenny G just stand in the back of the elevator. And then when people got on, he would pull out his horn and start playing elevator music while they rode up the elevator and tape their reactions when they realized it was Kenny G. I thought it was a brilliant idea. And management wouldn't even let me ask him. And that's a shame. There's a golden opportunity lost. And I think maybe I was just ahead of my time because these days, given like the various elements that late night TV uses to entertain the various skits and bits that they do. I think having Kenny G provide live elevator music is would be a hit. I wish we had a bigger building. We had an elevator here. Nobody uses our elevator here. You know, doesn't get any traffic. A big busy building with Kenny G and elevator doing live elevator music would be, I think, world class entertainment. Okay, let's see. We've dealt with our political. That's good. A few texters did point out, by the way, Matt. I said somebody explained to me why the city would wash off this crosswalk. A few listeners pointed out to me in the text line, 888-973-5476. It's clearly a safety and liability issue. I'm sure that the city uses various types of paint that are non-slippery, if you will, that are safer. And in a wet city like Seattle where we constantly have moisture on the ground, if you've got a crosswalk out there and it's been painted by paint that doesn't meet standard and somebody slips on that, the city is then liable for their injuries. That does make perfect sense. I just wish that these folks, and by the way, somebody else mentioned that the 83rd, Greenwood and North 83rd has a traffic light there now. So I imagine those come with crosswalks built in, right? Thank you for the Kenny G. Yes, I'll tell the boss tomorrow. We definitely want Kenny G. I just wish we had an elevator in this building because I still think that's a great bit. Anyway, it's Cairo Nights. We've got another hour to go, so don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.